Let's talk a little bit about productivity, and specifically I want to talk about popular productivity ideas that are overrated or that have, let's say, that have some hidden dangers to them. And I want to revisit the productivity topic a little bit, because it's one of those basic life skills, right? It's just one of those things where if you have goals in life, if you want to improve yourself, if you want to be more successful, like, you can't be wasting your time. You can't afford to be unproductive. You can't afford to be stuck in endless procrastination loops. So we haven't talked about this for a while on the podcast. And I want to talk about these. I don't want to call them productivity myths. They're not myths. They're just things that when I look at when I kind of do research, like, what are our competitors talking about, basically, right? What are productivity channels on YouTube talking about, stuff like that? These are things that seem to always come up, often very popular, where I'm like, I'm not so sure about this one, right? And one reason I want to talk about it is not just to say, hey, you know, this is a bad idea, don't do this, but also I want to explain why this, you know, what the danger is or why it's a bad idea. Because, well, this is kind of just what I do as well for my own development, right? I'm never satisfied if someone just tells me, do this, don't do that. Like, I want to understand why. I want to understand the principles behind it so that I can make my own decisions.
Right.
So that's what I want to, that's how I want to talk about these things here, so that we're not just talking about, yeah, like, wagging our finger, don't do
exactly.
this.
Just like bashing for the sake of bashing.
Even though that can be entertaining, right? Yeah. I get it. We could just like rant. but
roasting productivity advice.
Exactly. But that might be fun, but I also want to make it useful by trying to, you know, break down the principles behind this stuff. So I have five things. We're going to start with five things that I've seen a lot recently. It is the 2-minute rule, inbox zero. A third one that I can't even, this is, might be controversial. I can't even announce this one. You'll have to wait till we get to it. And then what was the fourth one? Got to look it up. The Pomodoro technique and life dashboards or second brain or something like that. Okay. So let's start with the Pomodoro technique, because I keep seeing this one, right? It's super popular. So can you, like, Pomodoro technique, I'm actually not entirely sure about the timing
anymore. Just
to
explain it, yeah. So it's supposed to be, I forget where this exactly came from, but the idea was you sit down for 25 minutes, right? Yeah. You do your quote-unquote focus work, and then the timer goes off, you stop doing what you're doing, you get up, take a 5-minute break, and then you repeat the process the whole time.
Right.
So at some point, and I do believe, like, whenever this was made, like 100 years ago, whenever, at that time when people's attention span was much better, they could focus for longer, it probably did work back then, right? But now, maybe, like, you know the science behind it better than anyone.
I mean, so the objection I have to the Pomodoro technique, and I think that the reason it's popular is because it's one of those things. We like to hear bad news, good news about our bad habits, right? So I understand that it's kind of like when someone says, hey, you know what's super healthy? Butter, right? This happens in this happens every once
in your coffee.
Exactly. It always goes through cycles, right? Fat is bad, fat is good, fat is bad, fat is good. So whenever the fat is good wave comes along, people are like, yes, eat butter, eat bacon, and so on. And of course, people love to hear that, right?
Right.
Of course, we want to be told that this is good for us. So it always plays well, right? So to me, this is one of those things, right, where you hear it and it's like, oh, I can be super productive and I only ever have to work 25 minutes at a time, right, or study 25 minutes at a time, and then I get to take a break. And obviously, like, what do people do in those breaks, right? You do your work for 25 minutes and you reach for your phone, and then it's TikTok and Instagram and scroll through the feed, right? And then you do 25 minutes of work again. And then it's again, mega stimulation, messaging people.
Ideally, if you're able to manage to keep it to 5 minutes, right?
Probably.
Yeah, like 25 minutes, an hour, and then back.
So that's definitely a risk. But also, so here's where my skepticism comes in. Think about what that does to your brain and to your attention. So you're spending 25 minutes, which is not that long, doing this important task, right? Studying, working, whatever it is. And you kind of have to get your brain into this, like, creative problem solving thinking working mode. But after 25 minutes, you switch into this ultra stimulating distracting mode, right? And think about what that does in terms of how you have to shift gears, right? And then after 5 minutes of that, where you've had like 100 times the simulation in that 5 minute window than in the 25 minutes before it. And now you're supposed to go back into deeply concentrated, focused work mode, right? So this is my main objection, because look, if you told me that you do the Pomodoro technique and what you do is you work or study for 25 minutes and then you like literally you just sit outside and look at the trees and the birds flying for 5 minutes and then you go back to work, that would probably be reasonably effective, okay? But putting your brain through this roller coaster of context switching is provably unproductive. Because so context switching is basically that, right? You do one type of thing and you switch context to another thing and then switch back. There are studies that have shown that it takes you a while to get back into it. So if you're, you know, you get in the zone, right? If you're doing creative work, if you're doing difficult work, it's like it takes a while to like get in the zone. And that can take up to 20 minutes. It can take up to 20 minutes for your brain to like settle into this kind of work. So that gives you 5 minutes of work in the zone and then bam, you're out again, right?
Back to the stimulus roller coaster. Yeah. Fair enough. And like, just as you were saying that, right? One of the things that was coming to mind was when you're doing focused work, the enjoyment you're getting from it is very subtle, right? And then when you're like on Instagram or whatever, the enjoyment you're getting from that is very, very high, like highly stimulating, right? It's kind of like eating, I don't know, like enjoying a coconut versus like Belgian chocolate, right? Right after you have a ton of Belgian chocolate, you go back to the coconut, you're like, maybe this wasn't that good.
Exactly. Yeah, you're like, exactly. So you're really making it unnecessarily hard for yourself to do actually good focused work. And again, the problem is like, I know that there are many defenders of the Pomodoro technique because they feel like, no, this works for me, or I like this. And it's like, well, you like it because you are not used to spending, you know, longer amounts of time actually doing concentrated work. You're so used to being stimulated all the time. And yes, I will admit that doing the Pomodoro technique is better than like, you know, constantly like every 2 minutes switching between stuff. It's better than that, but it's still like very suboptimal. And so what to do instead? So that's the reason, right? That's the reason why I think it's not great for anyone who's really wanting to pursue deep work. And what to do instead is you can do something quite similar, but do 90 minutes at a time. And there are many reasons why 90 minutes seems to be the ideal time for deeply focused single tasking work. One of them being that you have your biological rhythms, right? You have like the day-night circadian rhythm. And you have like a shorter cycle rhythm of you know, energy up and down, which is roughly 90 minutes. So there's a biological reason for that. But also in practice, this is what you'll see is that, look, for most people, because our attention spans are not great anymore, for most people, initially, it's very hard to do 90 minutes of undistracted anything. But even as you get good at it, as it gets easier and easier, even if you're well practiced, you'll find that usually 90 minutes, you reach some kind of a limit, right? It's like you exhaust your focus. Also, it's one of those things, you know, within 90 minutes, you'll probably have to take a bathroom break, you know, go grab a glass of water, something like that, right? So stretching it beyond that, I have found is not very useful. So I don't have a personal goal of like regularly doing 3 hour uninterrupted sessions. That doesn't seem very useful. It seems more productive to do 90 minutes, take a break, do another 90 minutes. That is an approach that has worked.
And at that point, you can actually take a half an hour break and not feel like a, you know, derailed.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, even there, right, if you go to super stimulating stuff in between, it's probably not optimal. But at least if you do a 90-minute session, then you distract yourself and do another 90-minute session, well, at least you give yourself enough time to fully get back into the work and you still have a lot of time left to work once you're in the zone, right?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, you're right. When you were describing the Pomodoro technique, that's what it seemed like. The main issue is the time frame is so small, right?
Yeah, exactly.
As soon as you start enjoying your work and get focused, like time to take a break.
Yeah. So that's what I'd recommend people try who are currently doing Pomodoro technique. Yeah.
Or try both. See which one you like better, right? Yeah. Which one was more productive?
Yeah. Which one's more productive? You're not going to like the 90 minutes initially, right? You have to get used to it.
It's true.
All right. So then the other thing, or the next thing I want to move on to, is also I've seen this often, is the 2-minute rule. And I believe this is from David Allen's, is it David Allen, Getting Things Done, which is, you know, at the time was like the big productivity smash hit bestseller, right? And I also understand why it's popular, because it's quite memorable, right? It's like, it's pretty simple. It goes like this. Any task that you have that you can do in 2 minutes or less, just do it immediately. Instead of, you know, scheduling it, making a to-do item on your to-do list, all this kind of stuff, right? Because it's, especially if you have, if you're following a task management system, it might take you longer to be like, okay, I'm going to put this on my to-do list and add it to the right category and put it, you know, schedule it for a date. It's like by now you could have just done it.
Yeah. Fair enough. The logic makes sense.
Yeah. So that definitely makes sense. Now, the reason I think this is dangerous, and you actually, when we were talking about it, you picked up on this immediately, right? There's a problem here.
Yeah. It's like, just be distracted all the time.
Yeah. Right?
It's like, you know, in Stephen Covey's quadrant, right? Like, it's kind of sounds like he's saying, just focus on the urgent things the whole time, right?
Exactly.
Because these emails come in, texts come in, you're like, oh, I just need to do a minute here, a minute there.
Yeah.
And the day's gone, you're like, shit, I didn't get anything done today.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is, most people who do, you know, most of us are doing like digital work in some form now, right? We're working at a computer, we're on Slack, we have an email inbox and so on. It really depends on your definition of a task, right? Most of us have a basically unlimited flow of 2 minute tasks coming at us at any given time, right?
Right.
Where it's just like, you could spend all day doing these little things. Oh, I have to reply to this message. Oh, I have to go download this thing and send it to this person. It's like, you could do that all day and you've done nothing important. So the caveat here is like, I understand the idea of, hey, instead of spending time managing this task, just do it. But what I'm saying is don't manage it either, right?
Yeah.
It's like the reality is that most of us essentially have to have a filter that keeps us from being distracted by, even by work stuff, right?
Yeah.
Just by unimportant work stuff. And so what to do instead? Well, there is an alternative to this that I think is very practical, has much the same effect and is more, you know, more productive, and that is using a distraction log. So that, because one thing that's true is that if something comes up and it's like, oh, I have to remember to do X, and it's a small task, if you don't do anything with it, it's almost like that gets saved in your memory buffer.
Yeah.
And it's like sitting there taking up some of your bandwidth, right? So you're working, oh, I have to remember to do the thing. Oh, you're working, oh, this other thing, I have to remember that too, right? And that can become like a mental burden to try and keep track of all these little things you want to do later.
The worst part is when you forget it. You're like, damn it, there was something really important. And then you feel like shit.
Yeah. It's also a very great feature of the brain. It's like, there's something that you need to do, but I'm not going to tell you what.
Figure it
out. Yeah. So... And that's definitely a problem. You don't want to be in that situation. A distraction log is a very effective solution for this. And this is also research-based. Unfortunately, I wish I could always quote the sources off the top of my head, right? It's like, oh, Stanford University, 1959 or whatever. But I don't. But, you know, I guess it's just like, trust me, bro.
Yeah, it probably is, you know. Yeah.
I read this somewhere at one point. It seemed legit.
You know what? You Google it.
Yeah, exactly.
You let us know in the comments.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, this is the lazy approach to podcasting. You tell us the sources. Anyway, trust me, bro. This is research-based. That if you use a distraction log where something like that comes up, oh, I have to remember to do the laundry or whatever, you write it down on a distraction log. So it's just like a pen and paper. You write it down. And then you keep working. And the next thing comes up, you write it down, you keep working. And what it essentially does is it like externalizes that thing. Instead of having it in your brain, it's just like you put it on paper. And so instead of saying, hey, is this, because otherwise you have to engage with it too much. You have to ask yourself, okay, is this a task that takes more or less than 2 minutes, yes or no? Is it important enough to do, you know, compared to what are my priorities, what I'm working on right now? It's like, it's already too much work. It's just anything that comes up that is not the thing you're working out on right now goes on the distraction log. And what you can then do is you can batch process stuff on your distraction log when you're done with your deep work. Now, what you'll often find in reality is that most of the stuff you wrote down is actually just not important, right? this is another thing. Like when you use a distraction log, you see why the two-minute rule is flawed. Because a lot of stuff comes up that feels like, oh, I have to do this in the moment. And then afterwards, you look at it and it's like, no, I don't have to do this. This is not important. Or this is not even my job or something like that, you know?
Fair enough. Yeah, that's what I was going to say as well. It's smarter to batch everything together, right? Yeah. Otherwise, it just sounds like you're doing busy work all day.
Yeah. And it's also the kind of thing that's much better to do at the end of your workday when you don't have the energy anymore to do like deeply focused problem-solving work, you know?
Right.
When it's like, okay, well, spend half an hour just doing all this nonsense.
Yeah, just replying to emails or whatever. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. All right. So that would be, that's the second one, two-minute rule. Now, the third one I want to briefly talk about. This is not necessarily like a productivity technique, but it's something productivity related that I think is overrated, and it's work from home. Obviously, right, the pandemic changed the world. Almost everybody has experienced work from home in some form now. And there's this whole debate, right, the great resignation, people refusing to come back to the office and so on, which I totally understand.
Right.
I'm not here to tell people they ought to go back to the office. I know how terrible most offices are, right? But what I want to say, and this is maybe addressing more people who are entrepreneurs and employers than employees. You know, if you're an employee, then you got to decide if your office is worth going back to, basically. But if you are someone who runs a business and you have a team, then there's, you know, I see like excitement about work from home that is sometimes warranted, but not always warranted. Because it is true that there are certain things, you know, I've also seen some data on this where people are more satisfied, like they have greater life satisfaction and stuff when they can work from home. There's also some data that shows, you know, that people are not less productive working from home. I think that's because they're not productive at the office either, but
yeah, you know. Exactly, yeah.
But anyway, so it doesn't do any harm there. And so, you know, I think there are many positive indicators for working from home. But one thing I would urge people to pay attention to is that companies who've done a lot of remote work successfully for a long time, who didn't just like discover it in 2020, usually have some, basically it's much harder to have good team culture and good team cohesion and connection if it's the more remote it is. And I've also, you know, I've talked to lots of like digital nomad entrepreneurs. I know a lot of people who run businesses like this, and most of them, they invest a lot of time and energy and money into the non-remote part, right? They'll do things like, they'll have rules like at least once a year, everyone comes together, which means we buy plane tickets, you know, for 500 people or something to make sure that everyone can come together and actually meet each other. And we have, you know, and other things like, you can read about this. For example, there's a book called The Year Without Pants, where someone talks about working at WordPress or at Automattic, the company behind WordPress, which has been fully remote since forever. But you can see how much they do to get people together and, you know, to get like teams that meet up more often, and then the entire company meets up and so on. There's an enormous investment of resources to make sure that you get the togetherness, the non-remote benefits of having a team. And the risk that people run is that they just go, you know what, working from home is way better. Let's just do this without doing any of that stuff, right?
Right.
We just think, because the risk is like that as the worker, you think, well, I'd rather be at home instead of at an office. Obviously, no commute and so on.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And as the employer, like, well, this is cheaper. We don't have to have office space. We don't have to, you know, we can save money. This is great. Like, this is a trap. If you think this is just like some kind of a, you know, this is just going to make everything easier and cheaper, you're in for some rough surprises.
Yeah, you're not going to be in business for very long.
Probably, yeah. It's really not that easy. So basically, for anyone who works with other people, this is the thing that I feel like is overlooked, is you have to be aware that it takes a lot to make up for the seemingly little things that go missing when you're remote. It takes a lot to make up for those.
Right. But, you know, another thing that comes to mind is like, I can empathize for people who are, you know, opposed to going back to the office, when I would assume, or I would imagine, a good chunk of them don't even like their job in the first place.
Yeah.
They don't like their coworkers. They're there. They're always getting distracted. Yeah. Someone comes up. You're trying to do focus work, and like, you can't because, like, freaking Johnny over here just bothers everyone, right?
Yeah.
And meanwhile, this person might genuinely enjoy working, right? Mm-hmm. It's just they don't enjoy the office environment. So perhaps that's something that could be looked at as well. Okay, what about our offices like driving people away?
Yeah.
Can we actually improve something here, right? Yeah. As opposed to blaming people like, oh no, you better come back, or like strong arming them.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And I think that's, you know, ideally, I think in the ideal world, you don't worry so much about the convention, because just this is how we've always done it is not a great reason to go to an office. But you also don't just see it as black and white. You think about, well, what is the ideal way for these people to work together? And it might be something like, that you spend 1 week together per month, or you have some, you have some hybrid approach is probably, you know, or even a voluntary, you can come, but you don't have to. The thing, again, the trap that I see here is that there's like a lot of excitement about how great it is not to have to go to the office. But it's like, you know, the good thing is there's lots of companies who've been remote for a long time successfully, and we can learn from them, and we must learn from them if we want to make this work.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, why would you reinvent the wheel when they've already been doing it successfully, right? Like, what are you guys doing differently?
Yeah. All right. So that's a little bit about work from home. Now, next one, this is more of a personal productivity thing that I think has lost a bit of momentum, but it's still around, is the idea of inbox zero. So this can apply to email, right? Where you basically want to clear your inbox every day, but it can also apply to something like Slack, you know, make sure that you don't have any unread messages at the end of the day, something like that. And there's lots of them. There's a book about it, and there's lots of talk about, you know, how to do this, how to manage your messaging in such a way that you don't have a huge queue of messages to get back to. And that makes sense, because it's unpleasant to have a huge queue of messages. But I think, again, this is a flawed, I think this is a goal you shouldn't have, right? You shouldn't have the goal of inbox zero, because you're putting yourself in such a reactive state. I think it is, or as an alternative, you should consider, you know, how can I make communication less necessary? And can I establish some kind of rules or something that help me have the luxury of not having to worry about the emails in my inbox or the messages in my Slack all day, right? So one thing to do there is to batch that as well. And also to apply a filter. I think that's because, look, one of the biggest problems with this, with digital communication, is that the faster you reply to people, the more messages you get, right? So if you have a queue of 10 messages that are pending and you're like, okay, I'm going to clear all of these, by the time you've answered the 10th one, you've gotten like 3 or 4 replies, right? And before you know it, and basically the faster you do this, the more continual messaging loops you have, and right. Then you're spending all day just communicating. So it's a bit like the 2-minute rule, right? It can end up, what seems to be like a productivity thing can end up putting you in a position where you're just doing busy work all day.
Right.
That might be comfortable. That's another thing, right? It might be comfortable because you feel like you're working. You maybe even feel a little bit like a victim. Oh, I'm so stressed. Look at me. I'm working all day, right? But actually, you're just messaging people. So, but it's also a tricky one to solve. And for me, I know that my solution is a little bit unorthodox, right? For me, it's just like everybody who communicates with me digitally knows that there is absolutely no guarantee that I will answer anytime soon, right? Like, you can send me a message and maybe you just won't hear from me back for a week. And that's perfectly normal. And you have to get used to it. And you might not like it.
Yeah.
But this is basically me taking control of my priorities. I give no person the right to determine what's on my to-do list, right? And that's basically it. You do not have the right to place items on my to-do list. That's what I do, right? Wow. So you send a message and you say, hey, can you do this? Can you do that? Can you do this? I'm going to be like, look, I've got my week already planned out. I'm going to do that first, and then I'll consider it.
Yeah.
You know? Now, you could say that maybe that's rude or whatever, and I know that this is not like the most pro-social way of doing it, but the thing is, people get used to this. People get used to this very quickly. And what happens is, like, I cannot tell you how often this happens. Someone sends me a message, says, hey, something, something. And, you know, I look at it like 3 days later and, you know, an hour later they replied, oh, never mind, disregard the above, I found the solution. There you go. We just saved both of us some time, right?
That's called being a great mentor.
Right? Yeah, no, it's
you're like, teaching resourcefulness, exactly. Self-sufficiency.
I nailed it. So I just reply, you're welcome.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, I have to say, that's one of the things I picked up, like when we started working together, right? Way back when. That was one of the first things I picked up. I'm like, oh, I'm always like responding to all this bullshit, right? So I completely stopped. And then there were times I remember, like, I would check my messages after hours or like days, right? And it would be like, hey, what's up? And then like 10 minutes later, so are you not responding to me? Like, what happened? And they're like, it's like as if they're having the conversation with me just without me present. Yeah. Like, I see the drama go on. And then in the end, you know what? I'm sorry. Like, you're probably just busy. Like, yeah, I was. But I'm glad we're good.
Yeah, yeah. They went like through a whole arc, right? They went through a whole emotional journey without you.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. But it was tough in the beginning. Like, especially like, for example, with my family, right? They're like, what do you mean you're not available at all times? I'm like, yeah, I'm not. That's exactly what I mean. But after that, it was perfect.
Yeah.
And the thing you mentioned, like, it never clicked like that, that, oh, I'm responsible for my to-do list and I dictate what's happening with my time, right? Like, I actually don't think most people are actually in a position where they could do that, especially if you're working in, like, corporate or anything, right? You're kind of, you know, your day is dictated by somebody else, essentially.
What I, you know, for that, what I really like is from Cal Newport's Deep Work, where he talks about this, where he basically says, look, have a negotiation with whoever's responsible, basically your manager, your boss, whoever,
supervisor, so on and so forth. Yeah.
Have a negotiation with them where you basically tell them, listen, we have to have a talk about this, right? I'm hired here to do your marketing campaigns. And in order to do great marketing campaigns, like, I need to spend time, you know, doing market research, doing creatives, whatever, right? This is work that requires my full attention. And the more of my full attention I have, the more of this work I can do. But here's the thing. I understand that there's lower priority stuff, you know, meetings, emails, small things, busy work that also needs to get done. But we need to come to an agreement, like, how much of my time do you want me to spend on important work and how much on busy work meetings, et cetera, right?
Right.
And basically be realistic, because you can say, look, what has happened? Maybe you try what we're talking about here and, you know, your colleagues or your boss is like, dude, why aren't you answering to my emails? I need you to be always answering, you know, within 5 minutes or whatever. You can say, okay, listen, here's what's going on. If I do that, bottom line, I spend 85% of my time doing busy work and 15% of my time doing the work that you actually pay me for, right? Now, I can do that if that's what you want. But if you'd like more of my time spent on shit that's actually important, then let's come to an agreement right here. And obviously, this is not always going to work, but I think it's a conversation worth having, because I think many managers, employees, whatever, employers would see that and be like, yeah, I get it, okay. If I can get more of your time doing the thing you're good at, but it means that you don't always reply within 5 minutes, that's actually a compromise I'm willing to make, right?
Yeah.
And if that's not the case, then that's difficult. Yeah. But I think it's worth having that negotiation.
Yeah. And also, like, better work is getting done faster.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's ultimately what you're saying. And it kind of reminds me, or going back to our work from home conversation, right? If your manager is unwilling to see that you can do better work faster if you're more focused, less distracted, it's good for you and the company. If they're like, no, we say no to that. That's not a place you should be working at, right? Like, that's why, like, the best people, you have to attract and keep the best people around, because they will leave, and they should. Yeah. They shouldn't be subjected to bullshit working conditions.
Exactly, yeah. So I would also say, like, if you're at your workplace, like, no one's willing to make that compromise, it's like, yeah, that's a bad sign. And obviously it's not that easy to just go find a new job, but if you want a good career, that's probably something you would want to prioritize.
Yeah, and especially if you're somebody who's even thinking this, hey, I want to do my best, you know, I want to do focused work, you probably already deserve better, right? Yeah. It's a good sign.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you. Keep going.
Yeah,
find totally. A better job.
Totally. And someone will appreciate that, right?
100%, yeah. One of those companies that's been doing work from home forever, you know?
Yeah,
successful.
Maybe them, yeah. All right, so the final one I want to talk about is the idea of, like, the life dashboard, which I see a lot when I, you know, we use Notion, for example. We use Notion to manage our work. And whenever I try to, you know, learn a bit more about Notion, see how other people are using it, I see a lot of this where it's like, here's how I manage my whole life in Notion, right? Here's how I use Notion as my second brain. And it's often, like, impressive, but so complicated, you know, where people will have these systems where it's like, okay, every task I do gets categorized as, like, okay, this is, you know, job, side gig, family, personal something, this, that, and the other, right? And this, and depending on the category, it goes into one of these boards. And on these boards, I have these priorities. And then I have these tasks, and I give them a rating. And then based on the rating, they're sorted here. And then I move them through this workflow. Like, for everything you do, that's what you do, right? I think for like 99% of people, don't do this. Don't even try to do this, yeah. Right? Because maybe there are some people, I sometimes wonder when I watch one of these tutorials, I'm like, okay, do you actually use this, right? Or did you just make like a super advanced Notion tutorial? But do you actually use this? I'm skeptical, because it's basically like you are spending, the problem is that a super complex interconnected system like this is very fragile. Hmm. So if you have a system where you're trying to track every single thing you do, you're trying to categorize every single thing you do, as soon as something breaks in that system, it will become a huge mess, right? And essentially, the more control you're trying to have over it, and the more specifically you're trying to manage and schedule everything, the worse it is. Because it means that, you know, you've got everything scheduled out by the minute. Like, you miss one deadline, it affects everything that comes after, right? You have like one bad day and your entire system is now a mess, right? And it also causes that problem where you might end up spending more time working on the system than doing any work, right?
Mm. Okay.
In general, what I found in teaching productivity skills to people is that simpler is better. And yes, we also use Notion, and Notion has a billion features and we don't use most of them. Yeah. Because you can do something doesn't mean it's a good idea, right?
Yeah, good point.
And in general, you want your productivity system to be as low friction as possible, right? So it should take as little time as possible for you to do the work in the system and for the system to give you an overview of what's going on and what's important. And the simpler the system, the better. I think that, you know, I know that some people use like super simple systems, you know, just like a simple to-do list. And I think if that works for you, if you can manage all your work in just a to-do list, that's probably what you should do, you know?
Right.
Because the added complexity that we have in our system with like Kanban boards and stuff, it's not that I love Kanban boards. It's just that the work we do is a little too complex to just be summarized in a to-do list. Right? Yeah. That's the only reason I'm adding complexity. It's like I'm reluctantly adding complexity if I have to, you know?
It's to the degree that we need it, not... Look at the fancy system. We're so cool because we're the productivity guys. Yeah. Right. It's not that.
Yeah, yeah. And so if I could make the system simpler and I could spend less time managing tasks and schedules and whatnot, I would.
Right? Yeah.
So that's also like the seduction, and especially the problem of if you find a new system, oh, you know, I'm switching from Asana to Notion. Like the seduction of I'm gonna do the ultimate Notion system, right? I understand that's appealing.
Yeah. And that in itself feels like you're doing something productive. Yeah, right? Like, imagine how much more productive I'm going to be in the future. So let me make the best Notion system ever, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
But so, to be fair, like, I've fallen to that trap as well. Like, mm-hmm. every time something comes up, like, I need to manage this somehow. Okay, let's put a new board. That didn't work. More mm-hmm. spreadsheets. More spreadsheets. And then I'm like, oh, shit. I'm spending more of my time just mm-hmm. managing these things than actually doing the thing, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and that's, I basically always try to solve for simplicity, you know? So, for example, from my personal life, right? I would love to have everything just in one system so you don't have multiple apps and stuff like that. But I found that with Notion, it's just not that suitable for doing like small tasks, you know, like very small things that are like not projects. And little reminders and things like that, it's not great for that. So I have started using Notion for like all my work stuff, all my projects, and I use the Reminders app on the phone for, you know, grocery lists and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's one of those things, you know, where you could say, no, but I have, again, like I manage my whole life in Notion. Well, no, I don't.
Yeah.
But the reason is not that I want to use two different apps. It's just that I tried both, and the solution of using these two apps is just a bit lower friction, right? Just a bit lower friction, takes a bit less time, it's a bit less messy, so that's what I do, right?
Yeah.
So I always try to solve for low friction.
Yeah, also the Reminders app is great for distraction log.
Yeah.
It's perfect, because it's so satisfying to push the button.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so those are the five things I wanted to talk about. So hopefully that gives a bit of insight into how to think about you know, building a productive workflow and making yourself more productive. Now, are there any others that you wanted to talk about or ask about?
Well, the Pomodoro technique for sure, is we already discussed that. Actually, one thing I wanted to talk to you about, like, you know how you described, instead of doing 25-minute sessions, do 90-minute sessions? Mm-hmm. So we do that habitually and for a long time, right? But eventually, I don't know if this is just being cocky or, like, overconfident. Mm-hmm. There are times when I feel like, oh, I don't have to do it properly because I can get up and go do something and come back and I'm fine. Because, you know me, I'm the productive guy, right?
Yeah.
So what's your take on that, I guess? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a common trap, basically. It's like you stop doing the things that are... when something starts working, you're tempted to stop doing it, strangely. But the a common example, and this is a real problem in medicine, is getting people to take their medication. Because what happens is, you know, someone has, I don't know, some issue, right? Some chronic issue, and you give them the medication they need to take on a daily basis to manage this. So they start taking it, and then after a few weeks, they're like, oh, I feel better. I don't need the medication anymore. It's like, no, you feel better because you're taking the medication, right?
Right.
And this is true across the board, right? It's like you know, what are all these fit people doing at the gym? They're already fit, right? Well,
you won.
It's like they're fit because they're still at the gym, right? Yeah. So it's that kind of thing where, I mean, for me, that's one of the things. I had that in my like daily reminder for a while. It's like, keep doing the things that are good for you, even on bad days, and keep doing the things that are good for you, even on good days. Because both of those are difficult. Both of those is like, oh, I feel like shit today, so I'm not going to do what you're not going to do your exercise, the one thing that's going to make you feel better. You're not going to do that because you feel bad, right?
Right.
But also, oh, I feel great today. I don't need to exercise. No, you feel great because you exercise.
That's a good point.
Right? And so I think this is the same with productivity. You know, look, it's true that you're raising your floor, right? You're raising your productivity floor, where if you've practiced it a lot, even on an unproductive day, you'll generally be more productive and more focused,
right?
Because of all the habits that you've ingrained, right? But still, if you follow like the Focus 90 protocol to do your 90-minute sessions and you follow it to the letter and you're like, oh my God, I'm so productive, I'm going to stop doing this now, yeah. You're falling into the same trap.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, and another question I have for you, like, I come across like people I meet randomly, right? Mm. And I tell them what I do. Like, we teach productivity, we do these things. And they're like, oh, I'm already productive. Mm. It's like, I don't have a problem with my phone. And meanwhile, while I'm talking to them, they're like on their phone. I'm like, uh-huh, for sure, right? So, like, how do you even explain to someone who has no idea, right? Like, they logically understand the words that are coming out of my mouth, but they have no idea how to conceptualize what I'm saying, or no frame of reference, I suppose, right?
Yeah, if they don't realize that they have a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Because like, ideally, those are the people that I want to experience this the most, because they'll be like, wow, I had no idea this is possible.
Yeah. I mean, that is a problem, right? That's like the kind of unconscious, incompetent stage.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what to do there. I think what does help is to have examples in your life, right? Because look, one of the reasons I even started talking about and teaching productivity is because people who saw my work kept asking me, how do you do all this, right? Because, you know, they would see that, you know, maybe they're following one of my businesses or something, and they would see that, okay, you know, I with my name on it or with me in it, it's like, they, you know, I publish like 2 videos a week, there's an email every other day, there's new products or features being released all the time, right? And they can just see like, hold on, how's he doing all this, right? And because people kept asking me this, and that's kind of how that kicked off, how I started doing this work. So clearly what seeing the way I work triggered in a lot of people is like, hold on, I didn't know that was possible, right?
Right.
It's like basically people see me do stuff that takes them all week in an afternoon. And they're like, oh, maybe I do have a productivity problem, right? But if you don't have that, and I think, again, that can be a problem with office culture, you know, where everyone's slacking off.
Right. Where it's the norm.
Yeah. And you're just like, oh, no, I don't have a problem. I'm not less productive than those people. Yeah, but nobody here is productive.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Like not being you know, worse than bad
is
not good either.
Yeah. But I think that's the only thing that comes to mind. Is like you have to have an example in your life. You have to see someone where it's like, oh, shit.
So you're saying lead by example then, basically.
I think so, yeah.
All right. I'll step it up, man. I'll do yeah. it for them, for the random people I meet.
Yeah.
It's for you guys.
Nice. All right. So I think Dean has a couple of notes as well. So let's do a quick swap here. Dean, what you got?
Okay, well, I was just sitting there listening into you guys, and it kicked off a thought with me that there's something when you start teaching productivity, which we've been doing now ourselves, you get a lot of no buts. So what I wrote down were the most common productivity no buts that I hear from people that have come through the Acario productivity courses and things that we offer. And I picked out five quickly that I know I used to say too.
Okay.
and I'm beyond them now. But I'd like to hear just your quick response basically to each one of these. So the first one is relating to the F90 protocol, which if you haven't, don't know all the details of that, it doesn't matter. You'll get it now, but you can get that obviously in our free stuff. First one is have absolutely no stimulation during this time. And the first thing is, but I listen to music when I work.
Well, here's the thing, right? I recommend that you de-stimulate your focused work session and you start with no music, nothing. Because like, okay, why do you like cling on to that? You know, I listen to music while working. Well, because you're used to all this stimulation. You're used to being constantly stimulated, right? And like ask yourself right now, is like how do you live your life? You know, how often are you stimulation free or a very low stimulation? You know, like for example, when you go to the bathroom, do you always take out your phone and do something? When you go for a walk, do you always put in your earbuds and listen to something, right? How often when you eat a meal, are you always watching something or listening to something, right? You're so used to constantly being stimulated. Even worse, if you know, listen to the podcast at double speed, watch the video at double speed, and so it's like even more.
So far, I'm guilty of like all of those.
Right.
Who isn't?
So
to some degree.
Yeah. So you're just so used to always having at least one extra source of stimulation that this suggestion of not doing that is an affront to you, right? And my suggestion is that if you want to develop the skill of being able to deeply focus, that's part of it. You have to learn to function without extra stimulation, okay? Now, also, in very practical terms, of course, it depends on what music you listen to, okay? Music can be used in a non-distracting way, and it can be used in a maybe even in a way that aids your work, right? But that really depends on the music. If you're listening to, you know, let's say whatever the Spotify recommend playlist, and it has you know music with lyrics, and then you know every once in a while there's an ad in there or something like that, is guaranteed a distraction. What you can try, you know, one thing that can work is that you always listen to the same kind of music to do the same kind of work. And I would say it has to be lyrics free. You don't have someone like talking to you in your ear, right? That can't be a good thing. That can help, you know, cue you into a certain state. It might also be worth trying an app like Brain FM that is supposed to produce sounds and, you know, binaural beats that are supposed to like help your brain in a certain way, but I would not start there, right? I think that something like that can be useful if you're in an otherwise noisy or distracting environment, then it's better to have something like that. But yeah, step one is get used to working without music until you can do that comfortably, then add music and see if it makes you more or less productive.
Yeah, that's perfect. That summarizes my experience, is that I cut the music and then I reintroduced a different type of music. In other words, not the music I normally listen to, but instead binaural beats or something like that for specific tasks only.
Yeah.
And writing or research, for example, is one of them where I can do it. And then other tasks like editing, you obviously need sound, but there are other tasks where it's just a no-go.
Yeah. It's the same for me. Like I sometimes listen to music while working, but it only works for specific kinds of work, and it's mostly not. Yeah.
Right. Next one is pack your phone away while doing focused work. But I use insert app, whichever one, productivity mm-hmm. app, on my phone to be productive.
Yeah. So don't use the app on your phone in general, right? Most apps are just not... So there's more than one reason, right? First of all, most apps are not that productive when using on your phone. For example, anything where you have to write something is just not efficient to do that on your phone. Mm. And so, you know, Abby was mentioning the distraction log in the reminders app. There's nothing wrong with that, but there's a desktop app for the reminders, right? And you can type there. And that's going to be much faster because you don't have to, you know, you're on the same screen, you're typing away, you remember something, you switch to that. You type the reminder, you switch back, you keep going, rather than, oh, reach for your pocket, take out the phone, swipe it up, open the app. Mm. Right? There's so many extra steps, and then type, oh, I made a mistake, whatever. Oh, the autocorrect screwed it up. It's like, no, that's so much more friction and so much more distraction. So this is what, you know, and if there's some app that you truly feel makes you more productive that's on your phone, find the desktop version of that, basically, or a web version or something. Because, yeah, it's the one thing is that it's just not efficient to use it on the phone. But the other thing is also that it's this habit of always reaching for your phone. Mm. Because listen, if you're telling me I keep my phone by me while I'm doing productive work because I pull out my phone to do something that's also productive, okay, can you look me in the eye and tell me that you never pull out your phone and then there's a notification and then half an hour later you've forgotten why you were here? These phone apps are designed to do that to you, okay? Like I think this is something people keep underestimating. When you pull out your phone and some notification grabs your attention, and then suddenly, you know, you find, oh, I've spent time that I didn't plan to spend in some app, right? That is not a weakness of yours. That's not you making a mistake. This app is carefully designed to do that to you. That notification that you were shown is the message, and the way it's shown and the icon is based on a test across millions, if not billions, of data points to find out how do we design this to make it get your attention, right? So it's like you're like, I'm pulling out this highly finely tuned distraction weapon that is designed to get my brain distracted, and I'm going to use it totally productively. I mean, how about you just don't do that? Try not doing it.
Yeah. No, it's so quick to or easy to say, but I need it. And it's important to say that it can be useful when used correctly. And one of the only ways I think that we use phones in our work situation is exactly the way that I'm using it right now, which is I have a Notion document and I'm now referencing what I wrote there. You do that when you script a video. You keep your phone, quickly check that, and then go. Yeah. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, but I just noticed actually as I was, you know, I was pulling out my phone out before to check my notes, and I immediately noticed that, oh, I actually would rather have the iPad or the laptop for that, because I just don't like it. I I'd rather not have the phone here. We kind of spontaneously started this recording, and I'm like, to me, that's, you know, mental note, don't do that again, because I really don't like it. I don't like using this for notes.
I'm the same. I feel like since it's been in my hand, this is the first time I'm ever sitting with my phone in my hand in a podcast, and I'm fidgety. I'm doing this. I'm just going left hand, right hand, touching it, want to look at it. It's crazy how it's affecting me.
Yeah. So and you know, using the iPad, of course you can say, oh, that's also distracting. But like, I have my iPad set up in such a way, you know, there's no notifications on there and so on. So for me, that is a much more distraction-free machine where I can be looking at my Notion and I'm not, it doesn't have the same effect, right? But that depends on how you use it, because if you use an iPad in its default settings, it's also going to ping at you every minute, right? Mm.
Let's keep going here. So next one's similar vein, but slightly different direction. Remove social media apps from your phone entirely.
Yeah.
And the but is always, but I use Instagram or Facebook, whatever it is, for work, for social media, and it's just easier is the thing that you get. Now, you've kind of covered that already in a sense that, you know, there is a desktop protocol. Yeah. But what I will say is that the excuse is always that, no, but it's easier. Oh, I can do it on the go.
Look, if you work in social media, right? If you're a social media marketer or a social media manager, whatever, then yes, sure, you have to have these apps on your phone. I agree with you. But also, you're not logging into your personal accounts then, right?
So that's the danger of doing this. And it's also maybe important to say, do you really need to be doing this? I know that's a whole nother topic, but this is supposed to be just short answers. I think that that's something that I've had to learn from working with you, is it's easy to just assume I must have this, therefore let me have all of them, and it's not true.
Again, like if you are employed as a social media manager at some company, then yes. If you're an entrepreneur and you think, oh, I have to post on this and that all day, it's like, no, you probably don't. Mm. Like, if you have a strategy and that strategy works for you, sure, do it. And find a way to have... It's like, look, this is something that's been on my mind, right? Because we've started posting some stuff on social media. And if this works for us, we're going to keep doing it. But if we keep doing this, I'm going to get a work phone that is separate from my personal phone, because I absolutely hate having these apps on my phone. I hate having them. I hate just having them there. Obviously, I turn off all notifications and stuff. But I don't want those things to be on my phone at all, right? Because it creeps in. It creeps in. And again, that's because these things are designed to do that. And I'm not assuming that my willpower is going to be stronger than, you know, the best designed distraction system by 1,000, you know, super intelligent engineers. Like, I'm not stronger than that, right? So to me, it's like, look, if you don't want to smoke, don't carry cigarettes in your pocket all day. So that's what I'd also look. If you're an entrepreneur, first of all, question whether you need to be doing this at all. If so, if it is actually important for your business, get a separate work phone for that and leave your personal phone aside and leave your personal phone clean. You know, the thing is, I often rant about, you know, the attention economy and smartphone addiction and all this kind of stuff. The thing is, the smartphone can be such a great tool. If you're really radical, I mean, I don't think it's radical, but compared to how most people use it, right? If you really radically cut down on the apps you use on your phone and you liberally delete apps, this is also something I do a lot, right? Maybe it's like, okay, I'm going to install this app because I'm flying on this airline. It's just easier to use that for your boarding pass and stuff. I'll install the app, go through the check-in, delete it, right? And so I'm very quick to delete stuff, right? It's like higher, slow, fire, quick for apps, right?
I like that, yeah.
And if you really radically cut down, like no notifications, no distracting apps, no social media, no games, no none of this stuff, you will have a completely different relationship to your phone. And I really like my phone because every time I pull out my phone, it does something useful for me, you know? And I'm not in that situation where it's like, oh God, I wasted 2 hours on this bullshit, right? Because this bullshit isn't on my phone.
Yeah, you're not a victim of your phone.
Yeah.
It's
a
tool.
Yeah, and it's so nice. Tool. It's such a good tool, you know?
Next one. On the computer, desktop. Mm-hmm. I've got all these tabs open.
Oh, God, why? Why do you have that?
But I'm going to use it just now again. I'm going to use it soon again. I need that tab.
Why do you
I don't
that
do
time?
This. I haven't been doing this for a long time, but I used to do it a long time ago, but I still see it and I get the, no, but I need it. I'll need it again soon.
But why do you need the tab open? Like when you need it again, just go there again.
No? The excuses I've heard is the switching cost. Is that it's like I have to go and open it again. I personally do that. I'm a radical single tasker with tabs and I close something and reopen it even 20 times a day, I reopen a tab. And even Notion, I have to close it because otherwise I might even be distracted by what else could I be doing right now.
Yeah.
As opposed to the main one that I've set aside.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't think it's wrong to, like, for example, Notion, I use the app and I have it open all day, but it's like it'll be in the background, right? So if I'm working in my browser, I switch to Notion, to the Notion app, to if I want to go there and I switch back. So there, I don't close that app because I'm not using it for 5 minutes. So I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's wrong to do that, but I don't think it's necessary to like close absolutely everything you're not using right now. But basically, you know, maybe the approach is this. You know how there's this idea with people who have too many clothes in their wardrobe, where it's like, go to your wardrobe, anything you haven't worn in a year, throw it out, right? Because you are telling yourself, oh, but I'll wear it later. No, clearly you haven't worn it for a year. This is not going to happen, right? With tabs, the deadline is 1 day. You didn't use this tab today, close it.
Definitely. 1 day is a definite. For me, it's functional to say what is active.
Yeah.
That means that if in this session I need these three, then those are the three. And if I need it later in 4 or 5 hours, it's closed for me. And that that came, I can now do that because of the radical single tabbing for a while as an experiment. And now I can have a few more again. But
so this is also like if you know, people hold on to stuff, like prove yourself wrong or right. You know, I think this is also just, this is a general self-improvement thing. It's like, don't discount things too quickly and be someone who can experiment, right? Because like to me, if you go, okay, I have 70 tabs open and the suggestion that I should close some of them, no, but I need them and it's less effective otherwise and so on. It's like, why don't you just try it out? Just try it out. See what happens, right? Once you get used to having like three tabs open at once, does that really make your life worse? Does it make you unproductive? Or do you look back and see like, why was I clinging to this so much? To me, it always reminds me of fasting, you know? Like I've done a lot of diet experiments and whatnot. And we talked about this right with the bacon fallacy on the other podcast where, you know, if I tell people, hey, I eat a mostly plant-based diet, it's like, oh, I could never do that. Like, why not? Why not? Why are you so... To me, it's like a sign of weakness, you know?
I can't start my day without coffee. I just can't. It's like, I can't.
What? And for me, it's like, you know, fasting is good because it's like, listen, I can literally eat no food for like a week, okay? So compared to that, you know, stopping not eating cheese anymore is a relatively small challenge, you know? And so for me, it was never this big difficulty of changing something in my diet because it's like, yeah, I've done water fasts, I've done juice fasts, I've done like raw... experiment with like raw food. It's just another, I've eaten only potatoes. We have a video about that, right?
I did it too. Yeah. It was good.
Bland potatoes only.
I won't do it again, but it was good. And that's the point, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I learned something from it.
And you can prove to yourself, hey, this is not that bad. It's not that terrible to try something different, you know? So with a lot of these things, if you hear someone who has spent years and years teaching people productivity, say, hey, maybe you should stop doing that. Try it out. Instead of just being, no, I'm definitely sure that the thing I'm doing is somehow better. Try it out.
Yeah. Last one. Morning routines, something we advocate for. It's like, get into your morning, give yourself time, space. Obviously, don't go for your phone first. That's all fine. My big but that I used to have was, but I'm really effective if I get straight to work. Like I wake up and I go and if I'm at my computer within 10 minutes of waking up, I have a really good work session. So the but is, yeah, but I'm good when I wake up and I get straight to work. What's your reaction to that?
Well, basically same as I said before, right? Don't discount something you haven't tried. But I do think that there's many interpersonal differences here when it comes to things like that. You know, I don't think that there's, for example, I don't think there's a perfect morning routine. Just like there's not a perfect time of the day to get up. You know, there is a subsection of the population, relatively small, that are night owls and that are maybe like, yeah, I do my best work between 2 and 4 a.m. or something. Okay. It's like, I'm not going to tell you to change your entire schedule just because I think, you should get up when I get up or something like that, right? And I think the same, look, I think that for most people, it's probably good to start your day with some movement, with some exercise, with maybe some writing practice or something like that, right? And then get into work. I would suggest that you try that. And if you feel like jumping out of bed and going straight to your laptop is actually better for you, then why not?
Yeah. My interpretation was always, oh, one must be better than the other. One must be healthier than the other. And that was the the second realization is, oh no, this I stopped doing it, and we started doing gym in the morning and all these things. And recently I got straight back to my computer early in the morning, and it was really productive again. So it keeps flip-flopping between the two. But what I've noticed is, it's not that it's bad for you, it's that it might not be the right type of thing for you, which is what you've said. I'm just saying it in a different way. What I mean by that is that right now I can't afford to only work an hour and a half or 2 hours a day. We've got too much to do. We've got a business to grow. I need to do at least 4 to 6 hours minimum a day to get the thing going. Now, if I'm in a position down the line where I can say, no, we've got this going, we've got a team, I'm talking way down the line, and I'm going, okay, you know what? I've reached a point in my life where occasionally I can afford to work 90 minutes today. Then wake up and do the 90 straight away, because it's not unhealthy. It's very effective. But it's not going to, you don't have to keep it up all the time, or it's enough. Whereas now, if I do that first thing in the morning, I burn out earlier in the day.
Right.
So it's not effective for my longer term strategy, which is why I'm not doing it, even though I am effective in that time.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's also, that's basically like self-knowledge, where you really pay attention to what is going on, you know, what works for me, under which circumstances does this work for me. And really, that is the end goal. If you want to become completely, you know, if you want to maximize your productivity, the way to do it is not to follow someone else's plan. It is to experiment with what other people recommend, to experiment especially with stuff that is, you know, that has some scientific basis. Experiment with these things, learn what works for you, and essentially create your own system. But you have to, the first step there is the experimenting, because otherwise you run the risk of just clinging on to your comfortable habits and telling yourself that this is the best thing to do.
And if you're not a type of person who does naturally experiment with this stuff, well, then stick to the basics.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So those are some thoughts about productivity. As always, like, this is a topic we'll you know, touch on every once in a while. And if anyone has, you know, if there's questions that you would like us to answer on the podcast, let us know by leaving a comment. But also, if there are other such productivity tips like we talked about today, where you're like not sure about it, maybe you have a yes but of your own to what we talked about, leave us a comment and we will address those questions in a future episode.